Coach P's perspective.
Serve God, work hard, family coaching, play my part. Faith is something that I use every day, game changing moves. Sit back, relax, and listen. Inspiration is my mission. Twitch, got your back, Coach 96. We do got your back. PCO be in my brain, CSL is in my veins. Ain't no stopping or no blocking. Heaven's where I aim. In order to succeed, we cannot be lazy. Repping Jesus all the time, and yeah, we're going crazy.
Hey fam and friends, hey, welcome to Coach P's Perspective, where coaching, inspiration, and faith collide. This is your host, Coach Chad Parks, and thank you for joining me today. I'm a college All-American wrestler, coach, and the author of the best-selling book, Game Changing Moves. This background has allowed me to train elite athletes, coaches, and high performers from all walks of life. So if you need a pick-me-up, a kick in the pants, or a coach in your corner, I got you right here on Coach P's Perspective. Let's go. Hey, I want to give a real quick shout out to my friends over at Terra Grappler. If you've never experienced Terra Grappler wrestling shoes, then you're missing out. You see, Terra Grappler has been re-engineering the standard wrestling shoes for about the last 3 years. Their comfy and stretchy Mattiform integrated sock-like layer is something you can't live without once you've tried it. I use Terra Grapplers, Zahid Valencia uses Terra Grapplers, and all I got to say is this, there's certainly something different to the feel versus traditional wrestling shoes. And for those of you listening now, you can actually get $10 off a pair of Terra Grappler wrestling shoes by using the code COACHP10. The code is COACHP10. Experience them for yourself. I promise you won't be disappointed. All right. Well, hey, welcome to another episode of Coach P's Perspective. Today I have an awesome guest with us. So Coach Pat Santoro, head wrestling coach for Lehigh University. And Coach Santoro, just a few of his highlights. I'll have more in the show notes, but he's been the EIWA Coach of the Year several times. National Wrestling Coach of the Year, was a head coach at Maryland, built and created a lot of success at Maryland, and then came over to Lehigh and has done the exact same thing. We were just talking off camera, you know, they beat Oklahoma State last year, which is really cool. And, you know, coach wants to wrestle those type of high caliber programs. You guys are a high caliber program. So coach, thank you so much for being on.
Well, thanks for having me, Chad. I really appreciate it.
Yes, sir. So, hey, well, let's start here. Tell me about like where you grew up, maybe some of the sports you played, and then how you got into wrestling.
Yeah, I guess. Well, I grew up right here in the Lehigh Valley, so about 6 miles from Lehigh campus. My dad went to Lehigh. My brother went to Lehigh. They both wrestled here. My uncle went to Lehigh. So I have a lot of ties with Lehigh. But pretty much I got into wrestling because my older brother, who I just, you know, he's kind of my hero growing up, was wrestling. I just wanted to be with him. So I just kind of followed him to practice, and I wouldn't say I was actively a wrestler as much as I just go to practice and kind of be the little guy watching everybody and jumping on the big kids. And then from there, we just, over time, I grew a love for the sport. But I think early on, I was dead set. I was going to be a center fielder for the Phillies, you know, and then,
yeah.
Then I got introduced to the curveball, and I figured I might stick with wrestling.
I loved baseball growing up too. So played for 9 years, but yeah, eventually wrestling kind of took over. So now tell me about, how that is awesome, man. You come from a family of wrestlers. So, you know, dad, brother, and then everybody wrestled at Lehigh, right?
Yeah, except for me.
Yeah. So dad and brother wrestled. And then, so tell me about your college career.
Yeah, I guess, well, in high school, I wasn't really highly recruited. You know, I used to brag to people saying I was a 3-time state spectator. So I never made it to the state tournament until I was a senior. So I wasn't a highly recruited athlete by any means, but I grew up, I think a lot of people just assumed I would go to Lehigh. But at that time I had no idea. You know, I just, I knew I loved wrestling, and I probably had a defining moment my junior year when I lost to the match to go to states. And I just sat there, and I remember sitting in the locker room at Liberty High School in their gym and just going, you know, it's not my lucky knee pad. It's not my lucky socks. It's me. You know, I had to have a mindset change, and just to have to take accountability for my career. And I wasn't like overnight success by any means, because the next year I didn't win the states. I just went there and placed. After my senior year, I decided I wanted to continue wrestling, but I knew I needed to mature. I was physically very mature. I didn't have any facial hair, and I was pretty small. So I went to Blair Academy for a year as a postgraduate. That's where Bob Attessa and Jeff Buxton were my coaches. And that's, I think, where I started really, mature and took off and just started really becoming a student of wrestling. And it was during that year, I was If you grew up in Pennsylvania, you're just a Penn State fan, you know, so I was going to walk on at Penn State. That's what I was going to do. And I got a call from Randy Stottlemyre, and growing up being a Penn State fan, I hated Pitt, right? Because back then Pitt and Penn State were the big rivals. And it's like, I'm not going to go to Pitt. There's no way. And then any guy being my best friend and college roommate was also at Blair, and he committed there. And another teammate of mine went there. And I say, just go out for a visit. So I went out there late April. It was way different back then. Spent the day with Randy Stottlemyre and Jack Spates, an Oklahoma guy, right? He coached Oklahoma for many years. A New York guy, but Oklahoma guy. But and I just, that day, I just fell in love with, you know, the school. And I thought Randy Stottlemyre is a guy I really wanted to wrestle for. And later on, found out he was a Christian, not knowing that at the time. But ended up spending my time at Pitt.
Yeah, so... what about your family? Did they tease you a little bit?
They were great. No, not at all. I mean, they were, listen, I was the late bloomer, I guess. My brother had a ton of success in high school and in college, but he was just always really good at the sport. And me, I guess God blessed me with the gift. I loved it. I love wrestling. I want to learn about it. And I'd put in the extra time, and that was just what I loved to do. But I remember my parents spending time with them. We came out, we had dinner, we after our visits, and they said, "What do you think you want to go?" I was like, "It's going to sound strange, but I think I want to go to Pitt." And it's kind of funny because my dad looked at me. He's like, "Well, your mom and I were talking. We personally thought that was your best fit. We just didn't want to tell you where to go." And so it worked out really well.
Yeah. Now, did you feel, because I'm a coach's son. Yeah. You know, did you feel extra pressure coming from a wrestling family?
It's one thing I got to give credit to my parents. I mean, I never felt pressure even to wrestle. It was just something I wanted to follow my brother. I just wanted to go to where he was. And I just wrestled. And then, like I said, I think it would help me. I wasn't very successful at a young age. I won matches, but I wasn't I wasn't winning state titles by any means but I just enjoyed it. Right. And I think they knew that I probably wasn't, I wasn't having that success at the high level like my brother had. They just probably thought it was a sport I was going to play, like I played soccer or baseball and ran cross country. And then it just started my senior year when I started getting some success and then placing the state tournament is when I was like, wow, I think I want to, if I can get to college and do this, that'd be great. You know, but I had no idea.
Yeah. Okay. So after you got on wrestling in college, or, you know, it could have been during college, but at what point did you decide like, hey, I think I want to be a coach. I want to stick with this and help others.
Well, that's funny. I was in eighth grade. My mom says, "What do you want to do? Do you have any idea what you want to do for a living?" I said, "I want to coach." She said, "Well, you can't make a living coaching. You better figure something else out." And I was like, "Well, I don't know, but I want to be a coach." You know. And then I remember saying, "Well, Dan Gable does it." That's what I kept saying. That's the name we all knew. And she just kind of laughed it off, I guess. And then I was at, you know, when I was at Pitt, I got a call to be a volunteer coach at Penn State, which is cool. One of the schools I was looking at with Coach Lorenzo and Coach Fritz, two men I just love, you know. And I was fortunate enough to be there for a few years. And that's where I met a lot of good people at Penn State. And then from there, I ended up going to Duquesne for a year. And then I came to assist Greg Strobel at Lehigh. So I was here assisting for like 9 years and then went to Maryland and then back to Lehigh. So
yeah,
kind of full circle.
Yep. So, you know, coaching with Greg Strobel, what are some of the things that you learned from him?
He was probably the most positive guy I know. Because I don't take losing well. I mean, I'd sit on it for a day. It eats me up inside. But there'd be matches when he first got here. I think it was Oregon State 1 year. We just got killed. It was like, I can't remember the score, but something like 44-0 or 38-0. And I was like, man, this is terrible. And he goes, it could be worse. And I looked at him like, what? And they were still on the bench. It's like during the heavyweight match, he goes, it could be 50-0. I was like, okay. You know, so just his mindset, like, we're going to get better. You know, he always had the big picture in sight. So I learned a lot as far as like, hey, it's not about right now. It's really about what the development of these kids are going to be by the time the end of the season is. And with the teams that he had, all his wrestlers have done very well post-graduation. It was really being a champion of your life, not just on the mat.
Yeah. So you guys live in a wrestling hotbed.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah. The whole entire area around there it's phenomenal high school wrestling, well, youth wrestling, high school wrestling, college wrestling. You know, for you, especially let's use like Maryland and Lehigh, you know, bringing kids into a couple of pretty big wrestling schools or pretty big schools that are in, you know, powerful conferences. What are some of the things that you look for in a wrestler? And do you kind of just stick in your area? Or are you looking nationwide?
We'll look nationally. We typically have kids regionally because we're such a small school. You know, kids don't think of Lehigh like you think, you know, where Oklahoma is, right? You know, we're, you name the big schools throughout the country, you know where Penn State is, you know where Michigan is. Lehigh, I think that's in Pennsylvania, right? And, you know, it's a small school, about 5,000. The nice thing about Lehigh, it's the top sport here, right, on campus. You know, we have a great following, great alumni and fan support. So it's a lot of fun. You're going to wrestle in front of a great crowd all the time. And the networking, just unbelievable. You know, I didn't know how powerful it was until I got here. I always heard about it until I got here and realized how Lehigh likes to take care of Lehigh, which is pretty important. An important thing for me is, you know, I want kids that really want to excel, because at the end of the day, we have a big roster, but only 10 are going to start. I mean, that's it. So these guys have to set themselves up for the rest of their lives. And so that was really important to me. So we're always looking for kids that they want to be part of something bigger than themselves. That's really important. And I think when you do that and you're focused on your team and others, it takes the pressure off of you winning and losing. You just go out and perform. Because at the end of the day, when you see guys get tight in matches, it's really about guys. They put so much pressure on themselves that they have to win. It's about a result oriented. And I think you're result oriented. You don't open up. You don't score a lot of points. You're content to win 3-2. And those matches are going to happen anyway, but that can't be every match. You'll drive yourself crazy. And that's, I think, what I did when I was in high school. For me, it was all about results. And then that day when I lost, it's like, I'm just going to wrestle and let the results take care of themselves. And for me, something clicked. It was a turning point for me. I was just trying to score as many points as I could. And win or lose, I was going to lose on my terms. I was going to win on my terms. And we're looking for kids that just love to compete. They're focused on, you know, like I said, being something, a part of something bigger than themselves, that when they leave here, this whole thing is a great experience for them. Because every wrestler has the right to have a good experience. And, you know, that's my number one goal. And because you're going to go through some really tough times. You're going to have some self-doubt when you're in school. You're going to lose some confidence. But you have the courage to move forward. It doesn't matter, because you'll find your confidence with your courage. And so we want kids that are pretty self-reliant, very disciplined. You have to be disciplined in this sport. I mean, you have to be disciplined in life to be successful. And you have to know what you want. You have to be willing to go at it and take accountability for your career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, you mentioned, and it's, man, it's so important. So a lot of people are results oriented. Yeah. Not just in wrestling, but life in general. Sure. And as coaches, you know, we're judged off of results a lot of times, being outside those type of things. For me, that was a big mindset shift, going from being results oriented to, you know what, let's control the controllables, man. Let's focus on all the things that we can do really well, and our effort, our attitude, all these things that we can control on a daily basis, and the results are going to take care of themselves.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much more enjoyable it is.
It is. And, you know, obviously we want national champs and All-Americans every year. That's just, and these kids want it for themselves, right? And those are your goals. But your ultimate goal is about how you perform. Because you, like I said, you perform at a high level, you're going to win championships, right?
Yeah.
It's when you start thinking about it, it's when you start to struggle. So the joy is in the struggle. You have to trust the process. You don't have to necessarily like it, but you have to trust it. And it's hard work and discipline work over a long period of time. And that's when your success really comes.
Yeah. So what would you tell, you know, an athlete? And one of the things that I'm a big believer in is principles are principles. Once you know them, you can apply them anywhere, right? We can apply them on the mat, a classroom, we can apply them in life. So a kid who wants to be a great college athlete, and, you know, we use your wrestling team, he's going to come into your wrestling team. And like you said, you're going to struggle a little bit sometimes. And I've been there, right? As a college wrestler, you were like a stud in your room, and you walk in and now there's five other studs just at your weight, you know, and it's a room full of guys, hammers, and some people get broke, some people get better, there's in between. But So what would you tell an athlete when he's coming in? Here are some things that you need to do to be successful in the sport of wrestling.
I just think, you know, you have to champion your lifestyle, right? You really need to do all the little things right. And that's getting your sleep. That's your social life. That's getting your work done. Because if you fall behind in your school, you're going to struggle. One of my biggest pet peeves when we have weight cutters instead of weight managers. Like we've had guys on our team cut, you know, good amounts of weight, but it's more of a management where it's just a minor inconvenience. Then you have weight cutters where they do the yo-yo, and that just really affects what you're trying to do. That's just, you know, you need to have a healthy management of your weight. Because I think cutting weight's just a waste of time, because you're not focused on getting better. You're spending 2 or 3 days a week just trying to get your weight down, and just your first opponent's to scale, and that should never be the case. The second one is just discipline in your schoolwork, because if you have that stress of school over you all the time, you're not going to be able to compete at a high level in practice. And the biggest thing is you need to train at a high level, and I don't mean just train for wrestling. I mean everything. Your school's got to be at a high level. you have to know why you're coming to school and what you're trying to get out of it. Because too many times I see guys go to college and they don't take the majors that they wanted to take because they're trying to find an easier major so they can wrestle. But you know, there's a history of people that are engineers and business majors, you know, across the country that are very successful after life, after wrestling college, after wrestling life, that are crushing it, you know, social, but it's because of the same principles like you talked about. And I think that's really important. You have to always be at a high level and take accountability to what you're doing. You know if you're putting the time in every day. You know if you're training at an 8, 7, or 10, and you walk out of that room, you have to make the adjustments from day to day. And my big pet peeve is, you know, guys, I work really hard, I should achieve this. I'm like, well, working hard, that should be the minimum standard on your team. Like, that should be the minimum standard in your life. Like, you got to do the extra. If you're doing what we require, it's not enough if you want to win championships. So I really want guys that are focused on just trying to get better all around. And I think when you do that, you actually get tighter as a team. When you're tighter as a team, I think you have more success because you're not just wrestling for yourself, you're wrestling for teammates. And then that's when guys start scoring a ton of points at the NCAA tournament. And you know, for us, you know, the last few years, the Easterns, we've won that tournament just because of bonus points, because they're wrestling for each other, trying to put points on the board, not just trying to get to the next round. And now we want to transfer that to the NCAA tournament, which I think we're getting close to doing that type of stuff. But it's really important to do those little things right on a daily basis.
Yeah. Yeah. The way you do anything is the way you do everything. It's what we talk to our athletes about. And you know I didn't understand that my freshman year of college. I mean, high school, I made good grades just because I could. Went in my freshman year of college and was, you know, sometimes I'd been going to some of the classes, and the coach pulled me in and was like, hey, you're on a scholarship, right? And I was like, yes, sir. And he said, you want to keep it in class? And I was like, all right. But, you know, I had to make a mental adjustment. And I had to make a decision, like, well, if I'm going to be here to wrestle and I got to go to school, I might as well try to be real good at it, you know? And then thankfully was able to do that. And then, you know, had a realization that, you know what, man, if I'm going to put all this effort into wrestling, I can put, or I should be putting that same effort into the classroom. Because again, kind of comes back, and I didn't really know the concept at that time, but the way you do anything is the way you do everything. And then you kind of become a higher level in every area. And, you know, so I try to get that across to our kids. And of course I work with high school kids, and that doesn't always happen. And you work with teenagers in early 20s, and you know, it's still, but it's so awesome when you see it click and a kid begins to do that in every day of their life.
That's probably the most satisfying, to see someone make that change in their life and they turn it around. And that's ultimately what we're doing as coaches, right? You're coaching life skills, not just wrestling skills. But what makes it successful in wrestling makes it successful in everything. I mean, once you can climb a mountain and stick the flag in it in one thing, like you said, they're all transferable. You can do that in anything.
Yeah. Now, what are some of the sort of key pillars in your program that you guys use?
Well, I think there's you know, toughness. You know, that's a really big one, because you're going to go through hard times. And you know, toughness doesn't mean you're not going to break down once in a while, but you got to build back up. It's kind of when you lift weights, you break down a little bit and you get a little stronger. When you can go through a hard time or an injury and come back, that there's a mental toughness there that takes you to a different level, that you make it as an excuse or you use it as a motivator to make yourself better. And you've seen guys, I mean, how many guys wrestled torn ACLs this year at the NCAA tournament? It was amazing, right? Like, you just heard about story after story, and these guys are getting on a podium. And there's that toughness. There's accountability, which is really important. There's team first, others first. And I think that's just a Christ-like characteristic that we all need to have. I think when you focus on yourself, it does put more pressure on just you, because you're just, now it's like you're in your world. And it could be a lonely place if you just focus, this is what I got. I just got to win. It's all, everything's about winning. Because there's going to come a time when those cheers you get, they're gone. Like, when you're done competing 5 years later, no one's cheering for you anymore. It was just something that you accomplished. And you may be at work and people are like, oh, it's great, you're an All-American, you're a national champ, that's great. But no one really cares at that point, right? It's just another goal that you set and you reached. You know, I think the biggest thing was that study that was done, gosh, it might be 30 years ago, about Olympic champions. And there was a high rate of depression like 6 months after they won a gold medal, you know, because everything in their life since they're a little kid was to be this Olympic champion. And when you win, it was great for a few months. And then after a while, the cheers stopped. No one really cared anymore. Life moved on and everybody's on to life. And they were like sitting around going, wow, I thought that was the end zone.
Yeah.
And, you know, 20-year-olds and 16-year-olds and 24-year-olds with Olympic gold medals that were just lost because their whole life was surrounded by one thing. And to me, that's kind of that gets a little depressing, because that'll haunt you later in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, it's tough. Yeah. You see it all. I mean, I've heard Jordan Burroughs talk about it, you know, I mean, and you see like in football, I still remember you know, a couple of different quarterbacks that, you know, and Tom Brady is the main one that really sticks out of my mind. But I think it was when he won his very first Super Bowl, he said, like, it was awesome for a couple of days. And then he was just like, wow, I thought there was more than this. Like, now I feel empty all of a sudden, you know. And of course, he's won a lot of them since then. But
sure.
Yeah. So I think, and that's something that's real easy to do, is to let your identity get caught up in your sport. And I did it a lot. I mean, I would say one of the toughest things for me, and this has really been on my mind a lot, because I think it's probably a lot of college athletes, and I think of wrestling in particular, but you've done it almost your whole life, or the majority of your life. Like you said, everything's kind of been guided and surrounded, you know, leading toward that, your goal is being a national champion or All-American or whatever it is. And then I know when I was done competing, I would say for probably 6 months, every time I would wake up 2 a.m, just cold sweat, just thinking like, man, like, I mean, I'm done. Like, I've competed since I could walk, basically. Like, I'm done. What am I going to do? How am I going to fill this void? You know? And I was a Christian, you know, I mean, had given my life to Christ, and I felt like my identity was in Christ. But whenever you've trained so hard, I remember going in and lifting and always being like, oh man, I've always lifted because I like to lift, because I want to be strong. And all of a sudden I'm like lifting, I'm like, what's my motivation? Like, there was not a carrot hanging out there to be a national champion or an All-American, you know, anymore. And so it's a big adjustment for people to make.
It is. And it carries over a little bit. I mean, we were all there when you're 20 years old. Your identity is kind of, it's a big part of your, it's not who you are, but it's a big part of who you are, right? Because yeah. You put so much time in, even when you're coaching. I mean, there's time we lose matches, or, you know, you have a tough NCAA tournament. You're licking your wounds for a couple of weeks. It's, you know, just processing it. Right. But you want to do better. You know, you still, cause it's what you do. So you still want to be good at what you do. And when you have a disappointing result, you want to fix it. You regroup, you get back to the drawing board, you figure out, okay, what can we do better? And then you make those adjustments. And I think if you're not evaluating yourself every season and trying to do better for the next season, you're cheating yourself, and you're cheating your team more than anything else. I was just with one of our alums yesterday, we were talking, and I 100% agree about every 5 or 6 years, you got to reinvent yourself. We got to do something different. And we started that. I was on a process doing that during COVID. We just didn't get a chance to incorporate it all this season, just because we had such a short season. I think we had like a 2.5 month season. Mm. That's a hard thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I know for us, I mean, and my coaching staff, usually like on the way home from state, we're kind of bouncing ideas off each other. And then a couple of days later, I'm usually sitting right here at my laptop and I'm on a Google Doc and I'm typing in things that we want to keep for next year, some things that we want to modify, and, you know, and ideas are flowing, because like you said, you're evaluating like, oh, this went really well, but man, we got to improve in this area.
Yeah.
I'm already like typing in like, hey, here's technique that we're going to focus on next year with this group. And yeah, there's a lot of that, but that's also fun at least for me. I think that's also fun. Yeah. So, and again, that's a principle that applies everywhere. If somebody is a CEO of a business, if they just stay stagnant, even if things are good, eventually you're not going to grow. You're not going to continue to get better. Other people will get better. And yeah, so it's got to be a constant growth process.
100%.
Yep. All right. Well, Coach, tell me, you know, you are a strong man of faith, and I initially, you know, I knew of Lehigh Wrestling, but initially kind of got your name and heard great things about you from a couple of mutual friends that we have. And you guys have done a Bible study together for a lot of years. I want to kind of start there, because I think it's so important. This is for everybody, but I think about a lot of times coaches, and, you know, you have your staff, but if you're the head coach, it can be a lonely world a little bit sometimes. Same thing for probably anybody that's a head of an organization. You're pouring into others, but are you allowing people to pour into you? What are you doing for some iron sharpens iron relationships? Are you trying to do things alone? You know, and you have a Bible study with like some of the best coaches around.
Yeah.
Just tell me a little bit about that. How did you guys get started on that? Why is it so important?
It was really a mutual friend of ours, Jared Spencer. He was our sports psychologist here for years. And he's like, oh, you got to come to this Bible study. It's pretty good. And it's pretty intense. And I've been praying about this for years, since before I left Maryland. Like, I haven't had a good Bible study in years. Mm-hmm. And so I went and I walked in the man that runs at his house, and there was like 25 people there. And I was like, this is way bigger than I thought it would. And now it's a lot smaller, but it was huge. Right. But it was really good. I mean, we got these things would go sometimes like 4 or 5 hours in, you know, being the summertime. And, it was pretty powerful. And I was like, wow, this is kind of what I needed. And then over the years, you know, like anything else, you just kind of, it separates and it kind of fizzles. And that did. And we started our own smaller group, which has been great because we bounce a lot of ideas off each other. We have one guy played professional sports. We got a sports psychologist. We got, you know, a high school head coach, very successful. We got a really successful businessman in that group. So it's different sports, different minds, but we realize the same principles, right? And it's all pretty much the same principles across the board. And for me, it's a great, because we'll spend the first hour of the study, we're just talking, right? Before we even open the Bible. And that's really important. I think it's really quality time. It's something I value a lot. It's something I won't really miss other things for. It's like, yep, Wednesday nights, I'm sorry, I can't. I got something that night. So it's
Yeah, whenever something's a priority in your life, you'll make time for it and you'll protect it.
Yeah.
Now, what are some of the things that you do in your own personal walk to kind of grow yourself, you know, in your relationship with Jesus and your relationship with God in general?
You know, I think it's just daily prayer for one, and then getting in the Word is really important. And that's tough. Sometimes you're on the go, and that's where I'll find a podcast. A really good friend of mine, he was our pastor for years. He moved to Houston, and actually I listen to his sermon every week. So using my way to work and back, I'm listening to a sermon. And there's like three or four pastors that I follow, and I listen to those just about weekly. So every day I'm getting a different message, which is something I try to do, especially when, you know, when I'm at work or on my way to work, I can't read. So I'm getting into the Word with that. But I think just finding a really good study and you know, diving into the Word of God is really important on a daily basis.
Yeah. So yeah, I do the same thing. So I love, of course, this is a podcast, but I love podcasts. Yeah. I have a lot of pastors I follow, and in my car, that's my time right there when I'm listening to. So what are a few other things? I love to study high performers in every area.
Oh yeah.
And you mentioned, you know, that you can't read while you're driving, but which makes me assume that you're probably a pretty avid reader. Yeah. So what are some of the things that you do for growth as a human being? You just talked about, you know, your relationship with Jesus and that growth there, but let's say like intellectual, physical, maybe daily workouts or the things that you do, your kind of life hacks.
Yeah. You gotta stay active every day. You gotta do something, you know, use it or lose it. Right. That's really important. So I try to do something every day, whether it's first thing in the morning or sometime during the day, if I can sneak out here and do some quick workout, something. The other thing is when I meet people that I know are, you know, high performers or were high performers, I pick their brain, you know. I think it's really important because I think you can learn so much from other people. I've learned some great things from, we have camps. I've learned some positive things from like high school kids just because they've been taught. And you know, one of the things I was always taught is never put an age on who you can learn from. You know, you can learn from a kindergartner, you can learn from an 80-year-old man. Just if you listen, I really like to learn. I like to listen to how people's experiences were, how they run things. I like to see what their struggles were and how they bounce back because they're all similar. We all fall short in some category and you could become better. And, you know, it doesn't matter what sport it is for me. If I can talk to a high performer and pick their brain, I want to do it because I just think, like I said, they're always transferable and it's really important.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny you're talking about that because so many high level people I know, whether it's coaching, business, whatever it is, have that same mindset of constantly wanting to learn and being open and willing to learn from others. And I think probably the time that hit me the most and I'm sure when I was younger, my dad or my parents probably said things to try to teach me that, but it was an example. So I was in college, we had a weekend off. I came back. My dad's a great wrestling coach. And he had a tournament and then we went over to this kids tournament and we're walking by the mat and these two little kids are probably 9 years old, 8 or 9, and they're getting after it. And this one kid catches another kid, he pins him. And my dad was like, oh, and he's like, here, hold on. And the kid that wins walks off the mat. And my dad says, hey, what was that setup you used right there? And the kid's like, what? And he's like, yeah, right. And so he like grabs somebody and then he shows my dad. And my dad's like, awesome. My dad's like this great technician.
Yeah.
And he just learned from a 9-year-old. And then he was like talking about it on the way home. He's like, oh man, we got to practice that.
That's a great story, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And when I saw that, I was like, man, like I got to make sure I'm always trying to learn. And then all these people that I meet that are really good at what they do all have that same mindset.
Yeah.
You know, so have to be open to those, like you said, not just open to it, I guess, but also cognizant, be aware of learning opportunities.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
Another thing I do a lot, I have a handful of college coaches that I'll I'll reach out to throughout the year. You know, two or three of them that I can, the guys I really trust, and I can open up. Like, things are going on in our program, I can kind of tell them. I'm not worried about it. You know, I'm using it against you in recruiting. They're just really good friends, and they share information, and I trust them completely, right? And it's pretty cool that you can bounce ideas, because they're going through the same thing you are, right? They're just different kids. So I think that's really valuable. If you can find someone in your profession going through the same thing, going through the same struggles, because there's always a lot of different issues in college, especially when you're dealing with 18 to 23 year olds. There's always something. And when you can share that and they give you some of their experiences, like, I never thought of it that way. So I think that's, for me, that's been really valuable. And I'm sure those coaches, if they hear this, they knew what I'm talking about, but that's been really valuable for me over the years.
Yeah. So in kind of talking about peers, you know how you run your program, but even me, I mean, I think I do this, and I try to let coaches know too, but there are other programs out there that I really admire the way that they do things. Where I like, hey, that guy's a pretty good coach. Who are some coaches right now on the college landscape that whenever you look at their programs, you're like, man, I like what that guy is doing right there. And it kind of inspires you.
Well, there's so many, you know. I can go right to the guys that I'm close, you know, someone I'm close to, Chris Ayers. I just watch what he did at Princeton. I mean, they struggled for a long time. So he went through it a lot, and it was funny because we joke a lot. So now, when I first went to Maryland, we really struggled, and I'd call Chris because he was at Lehigh at the time and they were rolling. And I just be like, oh, Chris, he's like, just be patient. It's going to turn around for you. And then when Chris first got to Princeton, we'd talk. He's like, oh man, it's really struggling. I was like, be patient. It's going to happen. And now it's happening. Right. So it's pretty cool, but I have a lot of respect for, you know, the coaches that really do it right. I think like a Lou Roselli, there's a guy that he does it by the book. He's a worker. You know what you're getting with Lou. He's always honest. I think he does it. I think you're seeing their teams make these big jumps. I think they won the Big 12 this year. They tied for it, that's a big step, right?
Yeah.
So they're going in the right direction, which is really cool to see. Obviously, you know, what they're doing at Penn State, you have to admire that. They've done a great job. I'm a big fan of what Iowa's doing. I think Iowa right now has one of the best cultures in the country. So there's a lot of schools I go on, but there's schools that I study. You know, I watch what they're doing on matches. I watch their matches and seeing what, you know, how they're reacting, how the responses are. Just I listen to their interviews. You know, Brian Smith at Missouri is another guy that does it right way. I think he does a really nice job. So there's a lot of people you can learn from, even if you don't directly speak with them, but you can learn a lot by just watching their actions and their team's actions and how they compete. I think that's really important.
Yeah. Yeah, like you said, you know, you said their interviews. It's so funny because, like, when you watch Iowa guys interview for the most part, or you watch Penn State guys interview, they're almost like clones of each other.
Sure.
They all have their own personalities, but then you get to see, like, okay, they're all kind of saying the same thing. That's team culture.
It's team culture.
Yeah, absolutely. Those guys have.
So, if you listen to the champions across the board, they're all saying the same thing, no matter what team they're on. So the principles they're talking about are, I mean, they're huge, right? Like, just the commitment level, the being grateful for the opportunity. When you're truly grateful, you just come excited every day to compete, whether you're in practice or a competition. And you can see it in certain guys throughout the country over the last, you know, for me, the last 15 years, just watching these guys and really studying them. They just enjoy competing. They're not always champions, or sometimes they're third or fifth, but you love the way they compete, and you listen to their interviews, you watch where they compete, and they all have a similar message about why they're successful, right? It's not so much like why you're successful, but it's their answers to the questions, and you can kind of, you know, connect the dots and see how they're successful.
Yeah. You say gratitude. So for us, like, we have a few different pillars, but one of the things that we implement is the word get, G-E-T. And like, we get to do this, but it's gratitude, effort, toughness.
Yep.
Gratitude, effort, toughness.
I might steal that
one. Yeah. So just a few years ago, I saw somebody had something kind of similar, and that popped into my head, and we started using it. Being grateful is so huge. What are some of the ways that we can teach gratitude, that we can emphasize gratitude with our athletes? It's powerful. You know, I know Penn State, I know the Sanderson family, and just in general, they're big on gratitude. And I've heard Kel talk about it and his brother.
You can hear it, right? You hear their athletes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so important. So what are some of the ways that you think?
I think it's, you know, it's something that you really have to, it's not an easy process. You can tell people to be grateful, but until they actually understand what to be grateful for. I mean, we're probably living in the greatest country, the greatest time in history, right? I mean, the fact that we have running hot and cold water, right? That's, we're in the top 10% of the world right there. You know, and a lot of the problems that we think we have, they're first world problems.
Yeah.
Right? They're really not problems. And I always think, you know, one of my quotes I always use is, the grass is always greener when you tend your own lawn, right? Because everybody wants to look and see what the others have. And you gotta bloom where you're planted, right? Like, there's opportunities everywhere. And you have to be able to be grateful for those opportunities and make the most of it. I think that's really important. Like, during COVID, I think for me, I was grateful that we had a season. You know, as disappointed as we were of all the pauses we had and all the shutdowns we had, we still did have an opportunity to compete. And anytime you can compete, you have to be grateful for that, right? Mm-hmm. But I think so much was taken away from us this past 14 months right now. And I mean, I'm ready to be back to normal, right? Like, but I'm just grateful that every day we get, you know, new things lifted and we can do more with our team. We can do more with our family. But you have to really change your mindset to why you're grateful. Cause it's really easy to get complacent and then want more. So it's important that, you know, I think it's, you know, we have two kids right now, and it's always like, you know, give them everything they need and a little of what they want, right? Because if you give everything they want, they're going to be really complacent. They're never going to be satisfied. They're always going to want more. And it's always, they want the next big shiny object, right? And if you're always chasing shiny object, you'll be really disappointed in life as you get older, because they'll satisfy you really short term. And you think that's the best thing. And then in a few years, you'll be like, oh, man, that wasn't as bright and shiny as I thought, right? So, you know, it comes back to that discipline of it. You have to discipline your mind, because you are responsible for what you put in your head. If you start having negative thoughts, I mean, you need to really talk with somebody. If you're having doubts, if you're always looking at what other people have, I mean, you see it all the time. You're not supposed to covet other things, right? I mean, and that's what people do. I think if you follow biblical principles, they're really sound advice, right? When you start coveting things, you're not satisfied, right? If you're, how many likes did I get on my Instagram post or my Twitter or, you know, I'm not a big social media guy, but you see it. Like, people get depressed when they're not getting followed or liked. And it's like, man, that's putting a lot on things you can't control, right? And, you know, you can control how you feel. You can control what you put in your brain, what you read, who you hang out with, the type of team and the culture you want. I talk about that a lot with our guys. Like, if you want a better culture, it starts with you. Like, you have to bring yourself along, and then you got to bring your roommate along, and then you got to bring your roommate's friend along. You know, it's, culture is a thing you got to constantly work on, because it'll ebb and flow. It happens all the time. And every coach will tell you there's certain years the culture is great. Other years the culture is not great. And you just have to keep fighting to get the right culture kids. And for me, I want right culture kids, kids that just love to be here and really are about making the team great. Because when the team's great, we're going to have great individuals. That's just the way it works. When you think the other way around, you'll have a spike here or there, but you really want to have those guys all fine on the same cylinders, and just their mindset. Mindset is everything.
Yeah. It's funny, because, you know, so much of our sport, and I work for Wrestling Mindset as well, but okay, so much of our sport is mental, and every sport, right? I mean, yeah. I asked so many athletes, like, hey, how much of your sport is mental? You know, and usually it's 80 to 90% or more is the answer.
Yeah.
Yet we train like 99% physical, you know, or most people do. And then we throw in a little mental here and there.
Sure.
So what are some of the things, and of course you have one of the best sports psychologists in the nation, and, you know, Jared Spencer and a Mind of the Athlete program, but what are some of the things that you guys do to kind of help your wrestlers with the mental side of wrestling that you intentionally do?
It's always having someone available for them. Really the toughest part is encouraging them to go use somebody, right? And talk to a sports psychologist. But it's really, I think the important thing is what you put in. Like I always say, you're responsible for what you put in your head, and can't let other people, you know, I always call it, don't let, you know, people walk with their dirty feet through your mind. And to me, it's like one of those things, I won't spend time on forums. I think they're dangerous. I think people like to, they talk and they don't, you know, they don't understand the situation. They can make a judgment on a kid, right? What's wrong with this kid? And they have no idea what's going on in that kid's life. They don't know if he's fighting an injury. There's personal things going on with his family at home. You have no idea. And all of a sudden a kid starts reading what some guy at home in his underwear is putting on a computer, right? It's kind of scary. So I, you know, one thing I always tell our guys, try not to spend too much time on social media, because you are responsible for what you do. And if you're going to read something, make sure it's positive. But it's too easy. It's too easy to get a, you know, get on Instagram and flick through it and spend, you know, before you know it, it's 2 or 3 hours of your time, you just waste it on other people's opinions and what they like and dislike, right? But a culture is so important, but your culture in your own mind is probably the most, you know, what you think is so a man is, right? So I'm just really big on biblical principles. Whether you believe in Christ or not, they're really good principles. It's a book for success if you really follow it. But I just really truly believe that if you're going to do things on a massive scale, it's got to start within your mind, and it's got to be something you do every day. When you wake up, you got to be conscious of it. Because how many days, Chad, you wake up and you don't feel like getting out of bed every day, right? I mean, one of my big messages with the team is you can't go through life based on your feelings, right? I mean, you'll destroy yourself. Like, you don't feel like going to class. Well, guess what? You got to go to class. You don't feel like doing your term paper. Well, you got to get that done. I don't feel like studying, but you better get it done. I don't feel like working hard today in practice. I don't feel like lifting. You know, you base your life on feelings, you'll never be successful. But I do know the more you do the right things, the more you want to do the right things. You know, when you're kind of lukewarm in things, it's really hard to stay motivated. Like I said, if you really want success, you have to motivate yourself. You can be inspired by people, but you have to motivate yourself, because motivation is a long-term daily thing. No one can motivate you every single day. It's impossible. You have to have that inner drive. So really important what you put in your mind every day and who you hang out with is probably the most important pieces.
Yeah, that was a lot of great information right there. Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, feelings are fickle, man. They change so quick.
They do.
Yeah. Yeah. High level performers are just consistent no matter what. Just
yeah.
If it's your Wednesday Bible study day, it doesn't matter what you feel like, you're going to it.
Yeah.
Workout, you're going to it. It's yeah, you just go do it. And then usually if you didn't feel like it and you go do it, you walk away feeling better anyway. Like, hey, yeah.
How many times you got to practice and you feel like crap going in, right? But you're done. You're like, man, I'm glad I went through that.
Just
walking there, you're tired, you're sore, maybe you stayed up getting your work done and you're just tired. You walk in and all of a sudden, man, in practice, you know, you got a good sweat, you got a great workout, you're walking out and like, man, I'm glad I did that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've never been glad sleeping in and doing nothing.
Yeah,
I've never walked away and said, that was really good today.
what is your favorite thing about being a coach? I know that's a broad question. It's probably a lot, but what's your favorite part of being a coach?
I just like seeing new kids every year. I think that's really rewarding. You know, I can't tell you how many times, you know, we talk about this a lot. I'm sure you've seen it. You see a kid comes in a freshman and there's times you're not sure if the kid's going to make it, right? But if you keep investing and you keep working with them, it's pretty cool in 5 years to see somebody that's kind of, and that's probably it's not the favorite part, maybe one of the most rewarding, when you feel like someone's lost those first couple of years and then they figure it out. And when you know they figured it out, it's a really cool feeling. You know, we've had wrestlers, gosh, in the last 15 years that you see them today and they're great husbands, they're great dads, they're running businesses. And it's really cool to see, because you know, that was that guy that at the time you're scratching your head going, man, was this a good investment, right? Because they're making mistakes. But if they're true to the process, and they don't always have to like you, you know, because you're giving them information they might not agree with or like. But when they figure it out, that's probably one of the most rewarding things. You know, obviously what you like is you love seeing guys reach their goals. I mean, that's what we do as coaches. We want to see them. If a guy wants to be a national champ or an All-American, it's different for every kid, right?
Yeah.
But if they get to that podium, they win a national championship, that's pretty rewarding when you see them get their hand raised, because you know what it took to get there. It wasn't just they got lucky that day. There's a lot that went into that 3 days.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, outside of coaching, what's probably, and you said earlier, we were talking off camera, but about fly fishing, what's probably one of your favorites, or what is your favorite hobby? Like, what's something you like to do whenever you're like, you know what, I'm taking a little break from work and I just want to go do this enjoyable thing.
Yeah. I think what we talked earlier, just fishing. And honestly, I grew up, any chance I got, I was fishing. You know, I came home from college, I was probably fishing twice a day, morning and evening. You know, I was just, whenever I had a chance, I'd go. And that's not often you get to do that, but during COVID, we just got shut down. And so I'd get up at 5:30 every day before we was up, and I just head to the stream, and I kind of got back into fishing. Now, I haven't done as much when we got back here, but it's just something that you really can, it's kind of, I can't explain it, but just you're kind of out there sometimes by yourself, and it's 5:30 in the morning, sun's coming up, and you see a couple deer running across the creek, or you see animals coming to life, and it's good God time, I guess, right? It makes you really appreciative. And sometimes you're not thinking about anything, and all of a sudden you hook into a fish, right? Just because you're kind of, and that, to me, that's rewarding because it's so opposite of our job. Our job is constantly on the go. There's always something going on. Your phone's never off. You got 40 guys on your team. There's always an issue of some sort, you know, small fires you're putting out. But that's something we know we have to do. But at the same time, I still have to be a good husband and I still have to be a good dad. Right. And then, So sometimes when I get the fish, it's that hour or two window and you just kind of like decompress for a little bit. And I think that's probably the part that makes you come back, because I think some people, it's like teachers, right? I mean, you're a kid, you see your teacher in the mall, you're like, what? They're not at school, right? And I think, you know, sometimes people think, oh, you just coach, that's all you do. And it's like, no, I have a family. We got our own things we're going through or working through as a family. And there's so much you got to juggle in life and your coaching, because you have 40 of your own wrestlers. Then you got your wife and kids at home, right? And you have this different things to focus on. So,
yeah, that's good. Yeah, I could just picture everything you were saying right there. It makes me want to go fishing. So
I know about it. Yeah. We'll have to go sometime together. So
absolutely. Yeah. I love fishing. And yeah. And I brought that up because I don't know that I had a lot of hobbies growing up. Like, my dad was a great coach and teacher, and you know, we have a family, but we worked. So in the summertime, it was like, we painted houses, we cut grass. It was a go, go, go. As a college athlete, I was just like, I'm a wrestler, I'm lifting, wrestling, I'm all this stuff. And I kind of got into frisbee golf a little bit my last 2 years of college, which is, I still really enjoy. But I think it's important to have a hobby or something that kind of gets you away to reset. And then you're better when you come back, right? And I'm not talking like guys that play golf four times a week and then they're not, or then nothing wrong with golf, but then they are neglecting their family or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, I think it's awesome to be able to reset and to do something like that. It's just as important as the hard work.
Yeah. There's no, it's funny you say about vacation, something I really never did.
Yeah. Me either.
Until we had kids. Right. And it was like, we have to make this time, right? You got about 18 years of vacation time with them, 18 times. And so we made that a priority, and for a while it was really hard. Those first 3 days, you're not relaxed yet, right? You're still kind of in that mindset. And then you finally, it's really important time. Yeah. Life is short, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. My wife's family, they're big on vacations, and they were missionaries during part of growing up, and they've traveled the world. And my family never vacationed. And then since we got married, you know, we got to go on a honeymoon and we traveled, and then we have four kids. And vacation is very important for us. And then I realized, like, man, there's such an education in this too for the kids, this traveling and doing these things. And man, it just hit home for me, Coach, when you said you got 18 years, 18 vacations. My oldest daughter is, she'll be a freshman in high school next year. So I'm like, ooh,
my daughter's a freshman this year. And we were joking a few weeks ago, she's driving to school. Remember 2 years ago when I said, Dad, in 2 years, I'm going to be in high school. I was like, hey, stop right there. Let's enjoy right now.
Yeah.
And then we were driving 2 weeks ago. She's like, it's 2 years later, I'm in high school. I was like, I know.
Man, yeah, it's crazy. Everybody says it goes quick, and it really does.
Really does, yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, Coach, well, as we get ready to wrap this up, I always ask three questions at the end. You can answer one of these or all three, expound upon it as much as you want.
All right.
But I want you to tell me about a hero, a highlight, or a hardship in your life, or a little of each. Hero, highlight, hardship.
That's pretty funny, because I do this with some people. I've done it with recruits, I've done it with some of our wrestlers, but hero, obviously gotta say probably my parents, right? You know, they sacrificed a lot. We had five kids growing up, they sacrificed a lot so we could do things, so they're definitely, mom and dad are definitely my heroes. Obviously I'll throw in there I was the youngest of five, so I really looked up to obviously my older brother for wrestling, but I had great sisters too that they all beat the crap out of me at some point, so but you know, I was really fortunate. Highlight. Gosh, I don't know. I've been blessed. There's been so much. Probably, I guess it sounds kind of crazy, but probably the wrestling highlight was probably when I was at Maryland. When we got there, we were, it was kind of a funny story. So we get there, there's five teams in the ACC, and we were last in our first year. So I went to my assistant's like, well, can't get worse than this. Well, the next year, Virginia Tech joined the conference, and we took sixth. So we actually did a little better, but we're still last, right? And then the fifth year, we actually won the ACC championship. So it was just cool seeing something come kind of from the bottom to the top. So as far as a coach, that was pretty cool. Your first national champ, Zach Ray, win, or for me, it was when Rob Roan won the NCAA title, and I was assistant coach at the time, but just people didn't know this, but he tore his rotator cuff in the semifinals of conference. So he didn't touch a mat for 2 weeks. And he had two pins all year, but then he had four pins at the NCAA tournament. And he had that come from behind win in the national finals, which is pretty cool. Now that was a pretty big highlight. So it's hard to pick one highlight, right?
Yeah.
Heartache. Oh, lots of them, I guess. That's just part of life. But I guess if I had to go like pick like a sport heartache, for me personally, it was probably that regional third, fourth place match, right? When I lost, that was pretty, for me, that was like, but it was a defining moment for me also, right? That was when I took accountability, and it's like, it's not my environment, right? It's not a luck charm. And that's when I became non-superstitious, right? I was just like, there's no luck involved. I mean, you could say there's luck with a call here or there, but I have to take control of what I'm doing. It's not my environment. It's me. And so I looked into myself, and then, but the heartaches, there's so many of them, you know. I've lost your grandparents. That's, it's always tough. Or a friend, that's tough. But you know, it's just wrestling related. Probably be personally, it was probably that moment. That's when I knew I had to make a change. It was more of a heartache, but a defining moment. There's heartaches every year, guys, you know, losing the national finals, and you just like, you knew what they put in and just came up short. That's tough. But, so I guess those, I know I probably rambled on a lot, but.
No, that's good. I mean, yeah, man, it's crazy as a coach how emotionally connected you get, because you know how hard these guys work. And then when they lose a match, man, you feel every bit of it. And as a competitor, you've been there before. And then now they're like, it's,
you know, a state tournament, an NCAA tournament. It's, you know, a friend of mine, it was Jared, actually says it's like going through a bunch of weddings and funerals every weekend, right?
Yeah.
You know, you one round, you're at a wedding, and next round you're at a funeral. Next round you're at a wedding, right? It's just up and down.
Yeah. Hopefully more weddings than funerals.
Yeah, hopefully more weddings and funerals at the end of the day. Yeah.
Right. So, well, Coach, man, thank you so much for being on.
Thanks for having me on, Chad. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been a blessing. You just like kind of, you have like a, like emanate a light, Coach. You really do. You have like a really good, you know, I know it's because your relationship with Jesus, but you have like a really good just kind of being about you, man. Just talking to you, it kind of fills me up and makes me feel good. So I appreciate that.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right.
Let's get that fishing trip set up sometime.
Absolutely. Hey, real quick before we get off here, where can people follow you or Lehigh social media? And I'll put your team
website. Lehigh, you know, Instagram account, Lehigh Wrestling. Obviously, you can follow me. I don't do that much on social media. I created accounts years ago. Probably one of my assistants had me do that. And I don't do much social media, unfortunately. That's something that we're looking to hire someone right now, a social media person. So it's like a director of ops, social media person, because we really need that. Because I am not a social media person. I just seen the effects it has on, I think it'd be really positive. It can also be really scary. So, but yeah, so probably not going to go a whole lot if you follow me, but just follow Lehigh Wrestling, and Lehigh Valley Wrestling Club's another one we follow a lot. So the local club, RTC.
Okay, cool. And I'll put those in the show notes, and I'll put your Lehigh Wrestling website in the show notes as well. Great. So again, thank you so much. Everybody listen, this has been another episode of Coach Peace Perspective. May God bless you, smile upon you, give you peace. Till next time, we're out. Hey guys, I want to encourage you to go over to bostonscally.com. If you wear scally caps, aka flat caps, apple caps, whatever you call them, whatever part of the country you're in, Boston Scally has the absolute best, hands down. Quality, culture, and blue collar work ethic, baby. Blue collar mentality. That's what they're all about at Boston Scally. They also have fresh t-shirts, hoodies, things like that. But really, man, if you're rocking the scally cap, go over and get one. Each one has its own story, and they all connect back to culture. So for me, whenever I'm rocking the Scally, I only go with bostonscally.com. And if you're going to order, be sure to use the code COACHP to get yourself a 15% discount. bostonscally.com.
Podcast complete, now me working overtime. I'm just a vessel for the spirit. When it's in me, then I shine. If the clay gets broken, he makes some whole new pottery. Repent for your sins, tell Satan to stay up off of me. With a new step, CSL rep, pop, lock and rock. Coach P, who never stops.